Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me as co-host for the very first time is none other than the delightful Belinda Lakeland. Belinda, welcome to the Big Three.
Hello, what a privilege to be in this chair.
It is great to have you with us. So this week we had our second kickoff in our PM discipleship cycle pilot. You weren't able to be there, but just to give you a bit of context, we did the Just Fast Challenge last week. So one of our May Mission Month projects is supporting food for the refugees in Lebanon who have fled Syria. And so we kind of lived off a refugee rations for 3 days. Now, the first time I met you, you were actually fasting. What's your experience of being like doing fasting previously? Why do you do it? What's it about?
Yeah, I'm new to fasting. So the first time I did, I was doing a Lent fast, which so many Christians around the world do. So I had an Orthodox friend telling me about it. So about 3 years ago, I did my first Lent fast. So it's 40 days. Sunday isn't included. So
amen. Yeah. The day of rest.
Sunday.
It's biblical, guys.
But Resurrection Day. So there's no fasting on Resurrection Day. I was just choosing what I did. So I just basically restricted what I was eating. So I think the first year I cut out meat and dairy,
heavy,
perhaps. So that was okay. So the second year I thought, I think I could suffer a little bit more. So I tried doing a vegan diet, which I found I wasn't prepared to eat like a vegan. You can't just eat lettuce. So I actually got sick. Yeah, so I had to bail on that,
yep.
Sadly, but I reminded myself that I'm loved and Jesus would be okay, yep, with that. So this year I just restricted what I was eating. So I ate three small meals, no snacks. So that was enough to feel hungry.
Yep.
But not enough to make me sick.
Yeah. Yeah. Boom.
So I learned from that the value of food. I think I realized we just eat way more than we need. And I also discovered that food tastes amazing when you're looking forward to it,
yep,
when you are hungry, which is something as, you know, I think in our world we eat so often, we often don't even appreciate the beauty and the taste of what we have,
yeah,
in front of us. No real spiritual insights. Like I don't think I got closer to Jesus or anything, but I certainly learned the value and the gift of food.
Yeah.
Right, what about your experience with fasting? Yours is far harder than mine.
I was also very new to it in the sense of I'd never done it. That's not true, actually. I did it once when I was 17 and I was new to the faith and I'd heard of fasting. I'm like, I'm totally doing this. And I didn't pack lunch for school that day.
Oh.
And then thankfully I had cash in my wallet and went to the canteen. Because I was like, this is horrible. Why would God ask me to do this? I don't understand.
So you remind yourself Jesus loves you.
Yeah,
you
also, yes. Yeah. So, you know, there was a lesson there of grace. So the Just Fast Challenge, I totally get your reflections on like, it really emphasizes the pleasure of food. And like, I know last night in our conversation around our table, that was a huge thing. We were like, actually, we don't eat for provision in our society. We eat for pleasure.
Mm.
You very rarely think, oh, I have to eat because if I don't, I'm going to be unwell. I'm going to be fatigued, all that kind of stuff. It's 9 times out of 10. It's like, oh, like what's Uber Eats throwing out tonight? Just how different our perspective of food is and how we use it, was really confronting. It was also confronting, being on the Just Fast Challenge, but still having to prep food for like my three children.
Yes.
So like Zeke, our youngest, who's on puree, like, gosh, it looked delicious.
Tempting. Yeah,
yeah. So tempting. Yeah. At one point I licked a knife that I'd smeared peanut butter on for my son's breakfast and just like,
sugar rush.
Oh my gosh. It was so delightful. But I totally felt like I'd been cheating.
That is cheating.
Well, yeah,
that's
I'm sorry.
Why.
Okay, gosh. Again, we follow a God
judged
who's full of grace.
Full of love, right.
Yeah. So today, as is kind of our custom at the moment during the discipleship cycle, is the Big Three is a little bit different. Normally we would have three questions that come out of our sermon on Sunday, but we didn't have a sermon. We had a discussion around the Baptist World Aid Project in Lebanon, supporting the Syrian refugees. We talked about aid and where, you know, evangelism kind of plays a part into that. And it was all around discussion. So for the big three today, we're unpacking a fourth question. We're kind of keeping that conversation going, and we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, our senior pastor, and kind of exploring that idea of, I guess, when does evangelism become evangelism, and what do you need to do in order for it to be evangelism? You know, we were talking about works and deeds last night during the discipleship cycle. So it's a little bit different today. So I guess there's only one thing missing, and that is Mark Rader himself. Welcome, Mark Rader.
Thank you, Matt Willis.
I'm just trying to be formal here, man.
Thank you. Like,
you know, I'm trying to show some respect to my elders.
The laugh gives you away.
Yeah, I know, gosh. I was so close.
You were so close.
Now, Rader, you also did the Just Fast Challenge last week.
Yep.
How did you go? How was it? What did you learn?
Well, I was trying to pay attention to it, this, because I knew that it was, we were going to have a discussion about it. So it wasn't like other... Like I've dabbled in fasting before, but like it's, you know, like it's something that it's quite private. You know, to some degree, you kind of take Jesus's words about when you fast, don't let anybody know. And so it hasn't been a public thing, but this was much more public because we had decided to do it as a congregation. And I knew we were going to be discussing it. So I was trying to kind of pay attention to how I was feeling and thinking about things. And, you know, I think that the insights about, you know, how regularly we eat really struck me as being quite significant. But I was also, you know, I did it with my daughter. So she and I were doing it together. And I was just aware, like, you know, she's 17, so she's not like a growing child anymore. But I thought, how hard would it be as a parent of small children to be kind of hoarding your tuna for yourself when you're like, this is the protein, like this is the good bit, you know? So I was really struck by that. I thought the food was enough to, you know, as you said, Belinda, I was hungry, but I wasn't starving. But like rice and pasta and lentil, like there's not a lot of flavor.
No.
And, you know, I was really struck by, I thought to myself, so if I were a refugee, and I can't even really imagine that, I know that I would be grateful for a place to stay.
Yeah.
I'd be grateful for the possibility potentially of sending my kids to school. I'd be grateful for food. But I don't know how long my gratitude would last if that's all I had every day, every week, every month. Like, you know,
it's running out.
Yeah. And the conflict has been going on for 10 years. Like, 10 years of one can of tuna every 3 days with some rice and just like the children of Israel came to mind of, you know, complaining about God's provision from heaven and wanting onions and leeks, which I never got. Now I do. Their flavor, you know, like
I love a leek.
Just, you know, fry that puppy up and chuck it in, you know? So I think I was just aware of, like, I don't know how long I would have been grateful. I think I very quickly would have slid into bitterness and, you know, anger about the fact that why don't I have the things that I had when I was still home, and why is this all that there is? And I think that would have caused, you know, a crisis of faith. So like, you know, just having a little less food and a little less flavor was kind of like, oh, this is really confronting. You know, I'm glad it's only 3 days.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think those were the things that were kind of going through my head, engaging in that. So yeah, but I thought it was a good experience.
Yeah, it was, I think it was just challenging to figure out how we live in such a privileged position, purely because we were born in a certain location. And yeah, I think it made the project itself, with Baptist World Aid, far more, it just brought it closer to home, I think, for me. I felt like we talk about it as a partnership. It felt like a partnership because obviously the funds that we raise through May Mission Month specifically go to providing these kinds of rations. And, you know, I guess, you know, the humbling thing is, you know, we get to the end of May Mission Month and we crack that target each year, and we pat ourselves on the back. And you know, it's wonderful that we're able to contribute in that way, but it even goes to show even that, like, that huge contribution still has its limitations. There's still so much more to be done.
Yeah, and the representative from Baptist World Aid who was with us, you know, kind of pointed out that, you know, some of the funds that we're raising is going to other community projects, such as, you know, trying to help some of those families access identification, birth certificates. And you just think, the children born in refugee camps who in the eyes of the government don't exist.
Yeah.
you know, and to become then citizens and to have access to education, healthcare, all of those sorts of things. You just kind of go, those issues are so big, you know, like it goes beyond the food. Like at one level, you're like, okay, it's an emergency, give them food. But now it's become this almost intractable issue, you know, and a whole generation been born in refugee camps. They're not Lebanese. They're not Syrian. They're, you know, like, oh man, it's heartbreaking.
It's amazing work what Baptist World Aid is doing.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's time that we get into the fourth question.
All right.
So I guess for anyone who wasn't able to join us on Sunday, it was Mother's Day, so people might have been out wining and dining their mothers and
eating
food for pleasure. The conversation took an interesting turn where I guess the challenge was put like, is aid work, is it mission if the name of Jesus isn't declared through the process? Like, is it enough to just kind of provide for the basic needs of people, or should there be a gospel presentation attached to that? And then I guess that just snowballed into this conversation around evangelism. And if we, as we seek to, you know, grow in our own discipleship during our days today, which is what this whole cycle is about, challenging us to do, to take our faith beyond Sunday services, you know, how do we live out the call to share the fullness of life that Jesus provides for us? How do we help that message go to those who don't know Jesus? And is it about words or is it about deeds? What's the value of both? All that kind of stuff. And you can see how it just slowly can play on the mind and mess with the head. So our question for today that I'm excited to kind of unpack is, when seeking to share the fullness of life with others, what is the role of words and deeds?
I think it's an excellent question. I'm glad, Belinda, that you're able to join us today, actually, you being the all about plan A and evangelism. I'm assuming you've done some thinking about this as well.
I'm here to correct you.
Yes.
Excellent.
And I'm here for that.
It's amazing how things can become so competitive so quickly.
Might be my last day on the job.
But I think there's some really important questions that come out of that. You know, like we had some of the discussion last night about what is the fullness of life, and is fullness of life for us the same fullness of life that we are thinking about providing for these refugee families? Because if they're not the same, then we've got to do some more thinking in that space. And you know, some of the discussion that came out was about how easy it is for us to basically transpose the world's view of full life into a spiritual version. You know, we can end up chasing the same things, seeking the same things, never really considering where there might be some divergence in all of that.
Yep.
And so I think we need to get really clear on what we mean by fullness of life. I think that becomes a really critical piece. You know, and sometimes we, and I don't think we can just pull it apart and say, well, there's the spiritual and there's the physical, you know, because then like that's a tough message to bring to people. You know, okay, yes, people might recognize that they're spiritual beings, that there are spiritual needs, but then basically we reduce the work of Jesus to forgiveness.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, but he came preaching a kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. So that's more than forgiveness. So there's something in there, but Jesus doesn't just want us wealthy. He didn't come just to kind of bring us into the luxurious life. That's different. So there must be a physical, material, emotional, psychological component, but there's a spiritual component that we see as kind of as a central element of it. So I think, you know, what's the full life? That becomes a really critical question. And then how do we invite people into it? Like, so I don't know, Belinda, if you have thoughts around like what is the full life?
Well, I have some thoughts actually from the sermon that I preached the week before on John 6 and the bread of life, because, you know, Jesus says, whoever comes to me will never be hungry and thirsty. And you know that there are Christians in the world who are hungry, and there are Christians in those refugee camps that are looking at sick children. And I really struggled with that. I thought, what does it mean? And where I ended up settling was on thinking he cares about our daily needs, but he cares about the system as well. You know, so where governments allow their citizens to earn a fair wage and don't overtax them, and where that people have access to clean water. And so I just realized there's so many factors involved in a full life where, you know, we have so much satisfaction in our life, satisfaction from eating, satisfaction from working. And for me, I think the satisfaction that we can get out of doing, we still need to work, but the satisfaction we can gain from doing that in a fair way, in a way where everybody has a equal opportunity. Some of my thoughts.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that it does. It includes both of those elements then, which means then that the gospel can be presented in word and deed, right? Like it is in part about promoting fairness and equality and about providing food and education and, you know, toilets and like all the things that we say, these are the kind of the essentials, you know, for people around the world and for us as well. But where the line gets drawn, you know, like, is it enough if people never come to faith?
Yeah. Or if I never tell them about faith, you know, one of the questions that got raised last night was, you know, is it more effective to just love Jesus and be kind and be loving? So through our works to, I guess, shine the light of Jesus in the world as opposed to like telling people about Jesus. Because obviously, you know, we live in a society that there's a stigma now around the declaration of Jesus because, you know, it has been done poorly and in a way that's caused harm and hurt. And so now, you know, I really feel a pressure that Christians are kind of, evangelism has kind of, it feels like it has to swing the other way where it's less about what we say and more about what we do.
Yeah.
But then it feels like we're completely neglecting, you know.
Yeah.
Evangelism.
Yeah. yeah. So she's
and
just.
Belinda's like, and you are.
And yeah. This is why I'm here.
So now who's being corrected, Mr. Willis?
hold up.
Just an observation.
It was an observation. It wasn't an opinion.
You did. Never mind.
Settle down.
I do think, though, that like there's something historical in that for us, right? Mm. So evangelism, and again, Belinda, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
Please do.
You know, I think evangelism for many people brings to mind like the Billy Graham Crusades, that evangelism is essentially like if you boil it right down, it might include being nice and kind and good and forgiving and loving and all those things, but it comes down to presenting the good news and having someone given a choice to respond to Jesus and step into that statement of faith. And that... And you almost inevitably requires some kind of words.
Yeah.
You know? But I think at the same time, you're right. So I think as Christians, we are struggling with the historical, I won't say, it's not baggage, but the historical kind of precedent and emphasis on words and the significance of presenting the gospel with a culture that doesn't want to hear that right away.
Mm.
And to some degree is now we need to win a right to be heard on that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, 50 years ago, you still had plenty of people who had gone to Sunday school, had been involved in scripture classes, and whether they believed or not, they had some common vocabulary.
Mm.
There was some common knowledge about some of that stuff. And there was I wouldn't say necessarily an openness, but there was more of a foundation to have a conversation more quickly.
Yeah.
Now I think that there's whether it's a stigma or just the way in which Christianity has been presented and which Christianity has presented itself.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not as if we've been under some sort of conspiracy theory. I think we've often done more harm to ourselves, you know, own goals than anything else.
Yeah, we've given the ammunition.
We haven't helped. But, you know, so how do we then win a hearing, you know, so that someone's actually open to kind of going, your life is different.
Yeah.
Which I think, again, comes back to, for me, that fullness of life piece.
Mm.
If my life looks exactly like everyone else's life, is anyone going to ask the question? And I don't know. So, Belinda, I don't know what your reflections are on evangelism. You know, one of the things that, you know, you and I have chatted a bit about is, you know, the five principles of Plan A is in part to kind of get away from techniques and tips about presenting the gospel in a word spoken way. But like, does that sound about right in terms of where we are as Christians?
Oh, totally. And I think Plan A does have five principles because I thought technically I'm employed by the Baptist Association to help Christians speak about Jesus, but I thought I'm doing everyone a disservice if that's all I train them in, because people need to want to hear what they have to say. People need to know that the person speaking to them is trustworthy. And so that's why Plan A, that's why it exists, because I'm like, you've got to be an authentic follower of Jesus. That's growing. You've got to be in relationship with others. That's knowing. And that's in that relationship, then that's where you can take care of people and do good works. And, you know, the rowing, like the church, we partner together. And so all of those things matter. And we do need to speak about Jesus, but we don't do it in a vacuum. And that's why I'm trying to have this holistic approach of word and deed.
Well, let me ask you this, like, because I think, you know, your journey is kind of recognizing yourself as an evangelist, someone who kind of is motivated by the possibility that you might get to speak to somebody about Jesus today. That's what gets you out of bed and what keeps you going. How many times would you say, let's just say the last year, in the last year, how many times have you had the opportunity in a one-on-one conversation to actually take people through maybe not even the whole gospel presentation, but any part of the gospel?
That is a good question. The pandemic may have impacted my numbers.
Yes. My count. And the competition is back.
You are not being marked on this, by the way.
No.
I think if you exclude talking to strangers, so people who talk to strangers get to do that more often. And okay. So before, when I was on public transport, I actually found I had more opportunities because I would talk to strangers. But I've tried to not tell those stories as part of Plan A, because that's not really what Plan A is about. Yes. So if we come down to who in my neighborhood, who in my community, who in my family have I had a gospel conversation with? I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 friends. Yeah. But not a whole gospel. Like, so it even means to me, like, so 5 or 6 friends have had a spiritual conversation.
Yeah, I find that so encouraging, because I wouldn't count myself as an evangelist per se, but I think to myself, you know, I think, you know, not only do we think of evangelism as word, we also think of evangelists as like Billy Graham, speaking to billions of people on media, and everyone comes to faith. And so if I'm an evangelist, then I must have, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of stories just in the last 24 hours of, you know, like, you know, talking to strangers and, you know, that leading them to Jesus. So I find it so encouraging that someone who's as deliberate as you are about this has had like a handful. Like, it's like, okay, so that just kind of helps scale things for me a little bit, I think, which is really quite valuable. And even, you know, like a spiritual conversation piece. I think that's quite, I think that's really helpful for us. I reckon that one of the critical pieces in this is actually about intentionality. I think that our intentionality is what matters. I think, again, Plan A helps with that intentionality, because you're thinking about, I want to have a conversation about Jesus. So you skip the third principle, not that I'm correcting you, but sowing, you know, the whole just sowing seeds in conversation and as you tend to say, kind of looking for interest, you know, seeing where that goes. But there's an intentionality, because I think one of the tensions that we can face in this is that we can try to be good people, but being a good person in and of itself doesn't necessarily lead to a spiritual conversation. I mean, you know, I've got a couple of friends, they're not Christians. They're just beautiful people.
Yeah.
Like, far nicer than I am, you know, you know, so that's not working for me at all from an evangelism perspective. So, you know, like, I think that whole thing about, you know, being good is not necessarily enough for us, being kind or forgiving or whatever it might be. We need to have an intentionality, I think, to be able to say, you know what, ultimately what I would like for my friends is for them to find the fullness in Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and so I want to serve them. I want to care for them. I want them to know that they're loved. I want to be loyal. And all those things that make for being a good person. But I think sometimes we lack the intentionality, which means that I'm content with being good.
But I think one of the challenges with that, like, in fact, it was one of the questions that was raised on Sunday, you know, how do you have that intentionality while still remaining genuine in friendship and not being deceitful? Because I think, you know, and I feel that pressure of, like, of course, my desire is for the people who don't know Jesus, who are a part of my life, to come to know Jesus. But it can, like, that whole idea of having an ulterior motive, it seems bad. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so, am I doing this? Like, I don't know, it feels like, and I don't believe this to be true, but it feels that you can't have one and the other. You're either, you're being intentional, and so your purpose is to actually see them come to Jesus, or there's a genuine friendship, like, which just kind of allows it to be what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you do both? Because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. I mean, one of the stories in our update. So for those of you who haven't been to Gaimia and seen one of our May Mission Month reports, it kind of gives us an insight in the project we're supporting. And one of the reports from someone in Lebanon at the moment was from a pastor who, and it was a beautiful story because he basically said there was a fellow and his family who were there every week at church, every week at church. And after one of the services came up to him and said, "I have something to confess to you." It's like, okay, what's that? And he said, "I've been coming to church just so you would help me. And I've realized that you would help me even if I didn't come to church. And so I've been really convicted that I want to follow Jesus because you have this authentic, true love."
That's awesome.
You know, and it's like, I thought that's the perfect scenario.
Yep.
And I believe that the pastor and his congregation were seeking just to care for these people in order that they might, you know. And I think my answer, I'm interested what you'd think, Belinda, but I think my answer to that would be twofold. One is, first of all, what is our intention? Like, is our intention that they come to know Jesus as their Lord and Savior? Well, that's kind of our vision. That's our goal for them. But our intention is, I think, really that they'd be open to Jesus. Like, so I think we have to almost ratchet back our intention a little bit so that we're not kind of double clutching on stuff, right? And kind of going, you know, okay, we've had this barbecue together, but we never talked about Jesus. So it was a failure. It's like, well, okay, let's settle down. Like, let's be looking for, not that they necessarily cross the line, although ultimately we would love for them to do that, but we just almost back off our expectation a bit to say, just want them to become open to Jesus. I think that's one thing. And then I think the second thing is to make sure that what we are doing for our friends, our neighbors, our those who don't follow Jesus, not open to Jesus, is at least in our mind and our heart lined up with the fullness of life. So there's continuity between my kindness to my neighbor and the full life that I hope that they will experience in Jesus. So that instead of seeing them as two different baskets, which we sometimes can, I'm doing all these nice things so that I win. I'm doing all these nice things in basket A, so I get an opportunity to have a conversation in basket B, which is really what I want. And actually say, no, this is all basket A. Everything that
or
I
plan
do.
A, or, am I right?
Oh, you're right. Nice. Wow.
You have a big future.
You can stay in that.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
You know, but yeah, it's like plan A, right? You know, so how do I make sure that what I'm doing, that I'm recognizing that what I'm doing is part of the fullness of life, that I'm not just being kind so that I can win a hearing. I'm being kind because this is the fullness of life that Jesus invites me into and is therefore extended to those around me, so that my kindness, the shared meals, the barbecues, the time spent, the prayers, the kindness, whatever it is all just an expression of the conversation that we might have one day where people go, "Hey, what's going on?"
Yeah.
You know, like you're different. Or the conversation about, you always go to church and I'm starting to wonder if there's not a connection, or whatever the conversation might be. However that comes about, I think if we can be more thoughtful and even intentional about seeing our actions as part of the fullness of life, I think that would help us collapse the dichotomy right into one thing. But
Yeah, I was thinking, we don't turn being a follower of Jesus on or off. We're always a follower of Jesus, always filled with the Spirit. And so we bring ourselves into relationships. Yeah. And so just by being yourself, you know, Jesus is present in that relationship. And so even thinking about the whole idea of, is this just a secular good work or a Christian good work? You know, it's kind of funny when you think about it, because I think the reason I have conversations with my friends that I've known for years is because I'm me, and they just know that I'm me, and I offer to pray for them, and I ask about them, and they call me when they want prayer. You know, so I think it's just, I was just me, and that's, I bring Jesus into stuff.
Yeah, and I think to bring it back to that that whole, like, what's our intentionality in this, and is that in any way deceitful? Like, again, if I can play on the plan A principles, like knowing, the whole idea of the knowing principle is that, you know, it's about finding the relationships that you already have established in your life and being intentional in that place. And if these are people who are already individuals that you have said, I want you in my life, regardless of, you know, whether you believe in Jesus or not, then clearly they're someone of value to you. Clearly they're someone that you love, that you deem as worthy of having a place in your world. And so then an extension of that love would be to share the thing of most value to you, which would be Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so
your pause eyes there. Just opened.
Yeah. You know, it was for dramatic effect. But you were like, oh my gosh, he doesn't know the answer. Clearly it's Jesus. So I don't think that, you know, using our relationships to share or using the opportunity of our relationships to share the person of Jesus is deceitful. I think it's actually, it's the obvious byproduct. You know, if I love you, then I want you to know the love that I receive through Jesus. And so, of course, you're going to be some of the people that I want to know. I also think it's interesting that, you know.
But can I just interrupt for a moment, though?
Because You're going to anyway.
I am.
You just did.
So the answer is yes.
Yeah, sure. I'll allow it.
I think, though, that there's a slight tension in the order there. Mm. Only in the sense that, you know, like, again, the representative from Baptist World Aid, at one point in the discussion, it said that same church leader, when asked how we could pray for them, didn't say, oh, for more money or for, you know, greater access to the government services. He actually said, pray that we can love people more. You know, dealing with, you know, and the Lebanese and the Syrians were at war for a long period of time. Mm. And, you know, so he, like this pastor's story, I'd love to hear more of the story because his dad was part of the Lebanese militia that fought against the Syrians. And he said, I grew up in a household that was very hostile to Syrians. Mm. And then here he is serving them. And you're like, holy. Yeah. But I think that there's, so from his perspective, he's not getting into these relationships because he loves them or cares for them or wants them in his life per se.
Yeah.
And not even in the sense that he doesn't want them in his life, but like, That's not it. Like it actually begins not with our relationships with others, but begins with what Jesus has done for us. Like just as you said that, I was like, oh, I think that there's something really important about the priority of this is what Jesus has called me to.
Yeah.
And that's the life that I try to live everywhere. Mm. Not to discount the idea that those that are special in our lives, family, close friends, you know, where we want that perhaps more deeply, but there's actually something, I think if we start with the relationship, do I have enough of a relationship to lead this person to Jesus? I think that's where we get into trouble with the dichotomy.
Yeah.
Cause then it feels like I'm trying to build up this relationship so I can tell you about Jesus.
Yeah.
And until you're important enough in my life to tell you about Jesus, I can't.
Yeah.
So we just have to work hard at this relationship so I can get to that. Yeah. You know, we're going to do this for crying out loud, as opposed to just kind of going, you know, to some degree that to flip it a little bit and say, this is the life that I'm experiencing, stepping into the fullness of life. And I bring that everywhere, which is just a slight difference, but I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah. So. But I guess that, you know, that goes to show, like, I think about the plan A principles and how it starts with growing. Mm. Like, I guess, I don't know, I'm assuming this was intentional,
you but go,
it's
Matt.
Growing, it, then it's knowing, definitely then intentional. Sowing. So like it first has to start with us and our following of Jesus, our experience of the fullness of life that he offers us, because then that overflows from us into the relationships that we have so that they'll be able to see it just by the way that we live.
And then it opens up any relationship, whether it's a stranger or you know, someone who we would normally, under normal terms, have hated, but God's brought them into our lives and we have an opportunity to care for them.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about trying to spell something with plan A rather than rhyming them all?
As in an acrostic?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Because it's just the question of your growing came first. And I mean, growing does come first. Mm. That makes sense. Discipleship. But I just wondered if you'd come up with a...
No.
And had me.
I messed around with alliteration, version. But no chiastic structures or anything. I just went with rhyming.
With what worked.
I think what I'm actually hearing you two talk about is almost the difference between the principle of rowing and knowing. So, you know, Matt, I'm hearing you're highly relational and you think about the friends that you know personally. Mm. But the example I didn't hear on Sunday, but it sounds like, you know, a church, that's an example of a community, including and loving people. Mm-hmm. And I've heard the same thing, a story out of Melbourne, a church just loving refugee families in Melbourne, yeah, and helping them learn English and providing for them, yeah, and some of those refugees became Christians. Mm. And that's the idea of when a community gets together and they just say, well, who can we love and serve? Like, yeah, you don't know them yet,
yeah,
but you're just going to, yeah, love and serve them.
Yeah.
And some of them eventually decided, yeah, to follow Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
But not withholding that service. I think that was the...
Oh, that's, yeah, you would just not do that.
Yeah, that's right.
But ethical, moral...
If that's not clear to issue. Anyone, yeah, but we I think love that's, everyone. Yeah,
but that's where part of that tension is. Like, so if I only, if I can stay this way, if I only love people, but I never, ever, ever get to speak the name of Jesus, am I being faithful in the work that I'm called to? And I think that we struggle with that, mm, a little bit.
I think that's the question we're discussing.
Yeah,
really,
it is.
Yeah.
We've kind of been circling, yeah, it for a while, but, yeah, that's okay.
So we're ready for your answer, mm, now.
Yeah.
Short answer, yes. Long answer, no. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I mean, I think that, but I think that's the critical question. Mm. And again, I think intentionality is what kind of makes the difference, so that if we are being intentional in what we are doing, then we're at the very least, we're looking for that opportunity,
mm, yeah,
for looking, mm, for the openness, mm, looking for the invitation of God. Because if we believe that Jesus is restoring all things, then that means that the people that we are serving and loving, Jesus wants to restore their lives too. Mm. And so he is at work in their life. And if we can be aware of where he is at work and when he is at work in particular and partner with him in that moment, then there's, I think, an opportunity for us to speak as needed.
Mm.
And it may be that we never do. And I think we have to be okay with that.
Well, that actually, you know, came up for us in our discussion, yeah, on Sunday, mm, which was this whole idea of, you know, we talk about faith being a journey.
Mm.
We talk about that it's not just, you know, not a Christian, then conversion, yes, then you are a Christian. Like, there are barriers that need to kind of be overcome before someone even starts to consider who Jesus is in their life. And so sometimes the seasons that we are invited into might just be to be the person, mm, who's kind to them. And maybe somewhere along the line that we'll never get to know about, yeah, that person will reflect back and go, I'm pretty sure that person was a Christian.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but through our kindness, then the next time they receive kindness, they might then put the two together and be like, oh, I think you're being kind because you know Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, oh, I think I can trust, yep, a Christian, which, yep, means maybe I can trust the church, which means I might be comfortable to go to a church, yep, one day.
Yeah.
I met someone that was exactly their story.
Yeah.
So a lady in her last season of life, like elderly lady, mm, just in a hard time of life, and looked back on her life and thought, every person who's taken care of me and has been kind has been a Christian, and just showed up to church and, wow, said, I want to know about Jesus because the, yep, Christians have been the kind people in my, yep, life. And I thought, those Christians would have zero idea, yep, that this is where she is right now, and gave her life to Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And I think back to people who have been involved in my life who will never know that I actually gave my life to Jesus. Mm. You know, I would go to beach mission as a kid every school, like every summer holidays, yeah, and I had incredible leaders who probably thought I was a massive rat bag, and like, they won't know that they actually laid some really solid, mm, foundation. Mm. So, you know, and I think that comes back to the whole, you know, do we need to say something? I think if we're being faithful to the invitation that's in front of us, mm-hmm, and sometimes the invitation is purely to be,
yep, yep,
Jesus in that moment, and Jesus was kind, and, yep, we shouldn't belittle that.
I think it can become a bit of an almost an excuse for us, though.
Mm. Yeah,
because I'm a little bit scared to actually talk about Jesus, so I'm just going to be kind, you know. And I think that's part of the tension, mm, for us as well. It's like, no, that's where I think the intentionality is so important. Mm. Like, I will take the opportunity to speak Jesus's name if, you know, the opportunity arises.
Mm.
And in our culture, it may not. Like, as you, yep, guys have just pointed out, it may just be that I'm called to be kind or to forgive, or, mm, to be gentle and compassionate,
yep,
or whatever the case might be. But at the same time, if I'm using it as a cop-out, oh, you know, they weren't ready to hear, mm, the gospel, and we never, ever get there.
Yep.
Or if we assume that evangelism is speaking the word, and I'm not very good at that,
yep,
and so we don't think about the kindness, I think that's where we kind of run into problems,
yep,
in terms of misusing that not that there's a dichotomy there, but the two components of word and deed.
But I guess that intentionality can be applied to reading the invitation. So don't just read the invitation with a bit of a cop-out of, well, that might make me feel uncomfortable, so I'll just do this.
Yeah.
Be intentional about actually seeking to see what God is doing. Because, you know, I think about Hopefield, an overtly Christian organization, but it's never appropriate for them in a therapeutic setting to declare the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
But, you know, people know that they're Christian. Mm-hmm. People experience Jesus through their experience of the incredible stuff at Hopefield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that there have been people who, as a result, later on, have come to know Jesus.
Yep.
But in, you know, in that context of being involved in the services of Hopefield, the name of Jesus was never mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so words have a place, absolutely, and we shouldn't be fearful of that. I think that's what you're saying. Like, there is fear of using words, but deeds are equally as powerful.
Yeah, I think to some degree more so in this climate.
Mm.
You know, where I think, you know, the church is has been untrustworthy in many ways, and that, you know, I think we do a lot of good when we are good.
Yeah.
You know, when we are a safe place, when we are kind, when we are the first to forgive, when we actually are a little bit less hypocritical.
Yeah.
You know, than we could be, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and to some degree, as I've been thinking about it, as we've been chatting this through, you know, is it words or is it deeds? And I think it's like many, many answers to many biblical questions, and that is, it's yes.
Yeah.
You know, yes it is. And that, of course, requires wisdom, you know, which is mostly about timing. You know, we often know the right thing to do or the right thing to say, but we often get our timing wrong.
Yeah,
wow. You know, and if you do or say the right thing at the right time, there's incredible power in it.
Mm.
And I think, you know, my reflection on things like evangelism is about getting our timing right.
Mm.
You know, there's a time and a place to speak.
Yeah.
And if we can speak the right word in season for people, I think that can be incredibly powerful. Mm. And that's, of course, where you need to follow the work of God, you know, because he's the only wise God, right? Because his timing's impeccable.
Mm.
Ours is a little slipshod, you know, so, you know, it's, nice. I think, yeah, that's right. We try, you know.
And again, we follow a gracious God.
That's right. That's right. And the older I get, the more rare wisdom moments seem to be, you know, like I just start looking back and think, oh, I've often known the right thing to say or do, but I'm not sure I've often got my timing right.
Yeah.
And so when those things have met together, it's kind of like you want to kind of put it in a little book and kind of press it and keep it for, so you can look back on it and be a very short book, but, you know, like to look back and go, oh, look at that. I was wise.
Yeah.
You know, I had actually had this moment when I got my timing right. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I was actually going to ask, you know, as a final challenge, like what can, you know, our community be considering as they seek to live this out? I think that's an awesome place to start. Mm. Like with the timing of things and the timing of the invitation and, you know.
I think the other big thing that for me came out of that conversation last night was, do we really know what the full life is?
Mm.
Or have we, and what parts of the full life that we have in our minds are counterfeit?
Yeah, wow.
You know,
that's like, probably another fourth question.
Yeah, probably. But I think, like, you know, again, that was kind of a question raised by the fellow who was there from the Baptist World Aid. Mm. But I mean, man, I thought that was a great question to ask of, like, do I really know what the full life is?
Yeah.
Like, really? Mm. Like, and am I aiming for that all the time? Am I seeking to step more and more fully into that? Or have I allowed counterfeit parts to slip in?
Yeah.
You know, where I'm like, oh, you know, the full life is obviously having a very meaningful vacation, you know, and going someplace exotic. And, you know, it kind of came out of the whole, you know, food is pleasure.
Yeah.
You know, that everything is about pleasure and rather than need.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, oh, wow, have I allowed that? I've never really thought about that really, but yeah, that's my life.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever eaten a meal because if I didn't, I was going to die.
Mm.
You just think, oh, that's confronting for most of world history,
You
know? So it's just, you know, and so I think some of those questions are also equally important for us.
Mm.
So,
but very big as well.
Well, I didn't say you didn't. You didn't ask. You
overwhelming.
You didn't ask for simple questions. That would be.
What a great place to end on.
You're welcome.
Everyone, now go have an existential crisis. Well, thanks for that, Radar. I really appreciate your insights.
Thanks, guys.
Well, my dear friend Belinda.
Yes, Mr. Wells.
After that very full conversation, what's kind of standing out for you out of everything that was kind of discussed? I feel like we touched on
a million things. Yeah, and so much gold. And at some point I thought, why didn't I bring a pen to take notes? I want to be writing this down. I think, you know, that final thoughts about, well, what is the fullness of life and how much our culture and media impacts what we consider to be fullness of life is really important for us to be thinking about. I think in terms of evangelism, when Mark said in our moment, the idea that we lead with deeds is really important. I think that's worth thinking about as well, because I want people to speak about Jesus. It's my job to train people to do that. But I think we need to give people permission to say it's not 1950 anymore, you know, and the idea, the idea that we can just in our personal relationships or workplaces sort of lead with word. I think it's important to understand that's probably not our cultural moment. And yeah, so I really appreciated Mark talking about that.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you?
I really loved that we need to earn the right to be heard. Mm-hmm. I think that's super important. And kind of tying into that whole we may know what to say, but we don't pick our timing rightly.
Oh, yeah,
I think the two, you know, play off each other. And I think we need to remember that we need to earn the right to be heard. And I think all you need to do is kind of look at where we haven't sort that out first. That's been where hurt has occurred. But when we do, and we do get that timing right, you actually experience, you get to witness healing. Yeah, I totally agree on that. How I go about crafting that skill, I guess, you know, Raider's favorite saying is learned by walking. He says it in Latin, but I'll just say it in English. I think we've got to start there. And so I think we need to let go of the fear a little bit and choose our timing.
Yeah. Can I just say, as someone who has mistimed many conversations, that it is something that you can just call out at the time, like, oh, that was awkward, or oh, that was mistimed. Like, just call it. Yeah, you know, everyone knows anyway.
Yeah. And, everyone's thinking it.
They're just like, well, that was weird. No, or even apologize, you know, if you think about later. Yeah, and I've apologized to people as well as I've reflected on stuff. And like, you know, I think I missed the mark there. And I think that just helps take a little bit of fear out of it.
Yeah,
just like, okay, if I do get it wrong, I can just go, haha, look at me getting that wrong, you know. but I said something because I care.
Yeah.
And it is, I can't say it in Latin, but I totally agree that we learn by walking.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us on the Big Three today.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure you're there at one of our services on Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.